Are Russia and Iran expanding military ties? The US says the two are giving each other unprecedented support in Ukraine and beyond. So what are the implications for regional and global security? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Laura Kyle. Iran is now Russia's biggest military backer. That's the warning from the US National Security Council. John Kirby says the Ukraine war is pulling the two countries into what he calls a full-fledged defence partnership. The West has accused Russia of using Iranian drones to kill civilians and destroy Ukrainian energy facilities. Kirby believes Tehran and Moscow could start making these weapons together. In return, he says Russia is providing Iran with air defence systems, helicopters and training. The UK has repeated the accusations at the UN Security Council. Russia's ambassador denies them and he says criminals are getting their hands on weapons the West has sent to Ukraine. Here's Kristin Salumi with more.
Russia called a Security Council meeting intending to highlight the risk of weapons being supplied to Ukraine falling into the hands of terrorist groups and non-state actors. Russia's ambassador, Vasily Nebenzia, alleges it's already happening, not only in Europe, but also in the Middle East and Africa. But before the meeting even started, the United Kingdom accused Russia of trying to purchase weapons from Iran and North Korea in violation of international agreements. Ambassador Barbara Woodward pointed to Iranian drones that have been shot down in Ukraine.
Russia is now attempting to obtain more weapons, including hundreds of ballistic missiles. In return, Russia is offering Iran an unprecedented level of military and technical support.
Russia denied any deals with Iran.
The military-industrial complex in Russia can work perfectly fine. It doesn't need anyone's assistance, whereas the Ukrainian military industry does not basically exist and is being assisted by the Western industry and Western companies.
The United States, the largest supplier of weapons to Ukraine, said they had no evidence that their weapons were being diverted, and they and other NATO-aligned countries promised to continue supporting Ukraine.
Well, Russia and Iran have been allied for years. Iran has confirmed sending drones to Russia, but says the deliveries took place months before the Ukraine war began in February. The two were partners in the Syrian conflict. Russian air power and fighters supported by Iran cemented Bashar al-Assad's grip on power. On the diplomatic front, President Vladimir Putin has promised to help Iran join the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. That's a security bloc created to counter Western influence in Central Asia. And Moscow has turned to Tehran for help to bypass Western sanctions. Well, let's bring in our guests now. And from Moscow, Pavel Falkenhauer. He's a defence and military analyst. From Oxford, Frank Ledwidge is a senior lecturer in military strategy and law at the University of Portsmouth. And from Miami, Kenneth Katzman is a senior fellow at the Sufan Center. That's a non-profit organization focusing on global security challenges and foreign policy. A very warm welcome to all of you. Pavel, let's start with you. We've got the US saying that Russia and Iran now have a full-fledged defense partnership. Is this true? What does it look like?
Well, there have been increased kind of exchanges, and apparently Russia has been purchasing some Iranian weapons, maybe would want more. But this is not the defense alliance. It's up to now a rather limited operation, a kind of trade, Russia buying drones and maybe shopping for Iranian missiles. Of course, Russian industry can produce missiles. Maybe even some of them would be better than those that are produced by Iran. But the number of ordnance used in Ukraine is so large, the Russian defense industry cannot produce enough. And buying more cheaper more and be more primitive. But Iranian missiles could help Russian operations. Again, there's the problem of ordinary artillery ordnance where Russia is struggling to compensate what it's using in the field. So this is a kind of very pragmatic relationship. It has not yet developed into a full kind of alliance. Russia still is balancing in the Middle East, Iran against Israel, trying to keep good relations with both. So it's maybe it's moving in that direction, but it's not yet there.
That's interesting. We'll certainly return to the regional relations in just a moment. Kenneth, for the moment, I just want to get your response to that. Do you think that this is a full-fledged defence partnership, or is it just limited in scope at the moment to Russia topping up a few of its drone supplies from Iran?
Thank you very much for inviting me. Coming to you from sunny Miami Beach here. I think it's heading that way. It's certainly heading to a full-fledged partnership. It's, you know, Russia's been involved in Iran's civilian nuclear program to generate electricity. Obviously, Russia was a major backer of the Iran nuclear deal in 2015, does not want Iran to have a nuclear weapon. So I think Moscow draws the line at giving Tehran any knowledge or any, you know, scientific help if Iran were to try to gain a nuclear weapon, you know, per se. But Russia is certainly willing to deal with Iran on missiles, drones, combat aircraft. Russia, you know, supplied Iranian combat systems in the early 90s, and now that weaponry that Iran has is old. It needs to be modernized and replaced, and Tehran is certainly looking to Moscow to replace all that weaponry. Mr. Kirby, Admiral Kirby of the NSC, said that Russia is training Iran on new combat aircraft, I think the Sukhoi 35s. And so it's expanding. The relationship is expanding, and it could bring Iran into conflict with NATO, with the United States, which is seeking to prevent Russia from acquiring additional weaponry to hit Ukraine with.
Frank, we've got the Institute of Science and International Security reporting that at least 1,000 new drones are on their way to Russia from Iran, plus short-range ballistic missiles. It seems that everyone agrees that there is this exchange going on, except for Iran. Iran is insisting that it's not, and the only drones it provided were before the Ukraine war started. Why is it so adamant that it's not supplying Russia with these weapons?
Well, Laura, I expect that's for presentational reasons, both internally and externally. But anyone can see with their evidence, see the evidence of their own eyes, that these drones, these missiles are being used on, if not on a daily, but certainly a weekly basis in very large numbers, far larger, I think, than the Iranians would admit to. But I go a bit further, I think, than both Kenneth and Pavel. Of course, one accepts everything they say and agrees with them. But it's a little bit more, I think, than just a sort of relationship of trade. We have Iranian so-called advisors now as combatants, essentially as combatants. Certainly some have been killed by the Ukrainians in Crimea. And the aviation element of this is really quite crucial regionally in the Middle East too. It's going to upscale and up-arm the Iranian Air Force to a level that we've not seen really since the early 80s.
Well, Pavel, your response to that, and do you accept that there are Iranian combatants in Crimea?
The Ukrainians say they are. Again, that's not being confirmed, that there were not so much combatants, that there were advisors. And, of course, right now in Crimea, there is no real combat yet, at least. And they were instructing Russian personnel how to use Iranian attack drones. That's most maybe possible. I mean, I don't know for sure, but it's quite possible. This is a kind of another step in the two countries working more together, two militaries working more together. But again, there's still differences in between Russia and Iran on other many issues. They agree on supporting Assad regime, but about Israel, they have very different opinions. And so this is kind of, there are zones of agreement, zones of lesser agreement. They're complementing each other with weaponry, though it's not maybe the best off the shelf weaponry, but for Russia, it's very important. Rearming Iranian Air Force, again, that's important, but does Russia right now have that much spare military industrial capacity to really rearm Iran when it's struggling to compensate the losses already in the Ukrainian conflict? That's, again, an open question.
Mm. And, Kenneth, just to pick up on Frank's other point there, and you mentioned the Sukhoi earlier, Iran is receiving, according to the US, advanced military and technical support, air defence systems, a Sukhoi fighter plane, within the year. If that is the case, how is it going to tip the balance of power regionally?
Well, that's, difficult to assess. You know, Iran is still, in terms of conventional weaponry, I'm not talking about missiles, I'm not talking about drones, talking about major combat systems, Iran is pretty deficient. I mean, as I said, they haven't really rearmed or modernized since the early 90s. They really have no capability to cross large waterways such as the Persian Gulf. Mm. Their ability to attack on the ground with armor is quite limited. So I don't see it really affecting the balance of power. What has affected the balance of power is Iran's own indigenous capabilities in terms of missiles. Obviously Iran is assessed as having the largest missile arsenal in the region, pretty much. And obviously we all see what they're doing with armed drones. Tremendous capability, way beyond what was expected some years ago. And missile accuracy devastated the Saudi oil infrastructure in 2019 with a missile strike. Drones were involved. So I don't think extra Russian weaponry, including combat aircraft, is going to make much difference. There's still, if you compare it to the Israeli Air Force, this is not a match. I mean, the Israeli Air Force is just much more proficient, obviously.
Frank, even if the actual hardware, the technology itself, isn't going to make much difference to the balance of power, Russia still has to be careful, doesn't it? Because Saudi and especially Israel are incredibly sensitive about any support given to Iran. It's quite a difficult tightrope that Russia will be walking here.
Yes, absolutely. And that Israel-Russia axis is important. And of course, that's annoying, let's say, to put it mildly, the Ukrainians at the moment. Israel has said that it will not provide military equipment to Ukraine. Now, there's some questions to whether or not some things have got through. But that axis is vital, I think, as much, both politically in Israel and to a lesser extent in Russia. I just want to come back to something Kenneth said there. He's entirely right, of course. But I think we should also look at the Ukrainian angle. The new drones or the new loitering munitions or cruise missiles or whatever you want to call them, you can call them all three. The new drones that are being envisaged here, the Arash 2 Mark, as well as the old Shahid, well, they're not old, the Shahid 136s. I mean, they've already caused a great deal of damage, but the new ones are really going to change the threat profile for the Ukrainians. They're going to make a major difference to them and put the Ukrainian people under further threat of immiseration. I wouldn't underplay the importance, really, of this new transmission, if you like, of military materials. I think it's really important to the balance of conventional forces in Ukraine, particularly in the air. And that shouldn't be underplayed. It's going to cause a very great degree, a step change, actually, I think, in the problems for Ukrainian air defences. It's a really important move, particularly if those Arash-2 and the ballistic missiles get through. Now, it's going to take a while for them to do so, but I'm almost certain they will in the end.
And do you think, Frank, that these new weapons, these new drones, these new missiles are going to be made in Russia or in conjunction between Iran and Russia, as reports have suggested?
Right. There are signs, yes, that the Russians are essentially going to be licensed to build some of these things. And there's evidence already discovered by Ukrainian weapons intelligence that some of the Shahid, the sort of Delta wing drones that we've seen, the lawnmowers, as they're called, were, in fact, essentially reconstructed in Russia. So it does look as if that's already happening. I have no doubt at all It will continue to do so. But I think, as Pavel's already said, Russian industry is already under a great deal of pressure. And there is a question as to whether they have the capacity to sort of take on new lines, if you like, of construction.
Pavel, do you agree with that? Do you see these new weapons coming in from Iran as being significant enough for Putin to make some big changes in Ukraine on the battlefield?
Well, if not on the battlefield, then attacking targets in the rear, especially big and yeah. targets and targets, soft kind of soft targets, like electric power stations and so on, and industrial plants, I mean, fixed big targets. Yes, they're going to be, they'll have an impact. Basically, these attack drones were developed to kind of swarm the Israeli air defenses that attack Israeli cities with large numbers. And that's why they're kind of primitive, cheap, but should be sent in large numbers and used against Ukrainian cities and Ukrainian targets. Yes, they'll have an impact, though on the battlefield, most likely their effectiveness, I mean, of actually eroding the Ukrainian battle readiness of Ukrainian combat troops, most likely much less so. And, of course, also if the ballistic missiles arrive, that could allow Russia to increase the barrage of missiles again on Ukrainian targets in the rear, Ukrainian cities and Ukrainian industrial plants, power stations. So this will have give Russia additional kind of armament, weaponry in their toolbox, though most likely it will not, I don't think it's going to actually tilt the balance of power and change the course of the conflict, but it could have a very serious effect. What really could change very dramatically is what may happen in the Middle East. If Russia actually moves from balancing between Israel and Iran into moving into the Iranian camp and with Russian forces still deployed in Syria, including fighter jets and missile defenses and missiles, that could be a very significant change. And there's also actually a possibility, if Russia changes sides there, of a direct Russia-Israeli military confrontation. Most likely everyone would want to avoid that, but that's right now kind of a possibility. Okay. And this could change a lot in the Middle East.
Kenneth, isn't Iran not making a very big gamble here by increasing the impact that Russia can have in Ukraine? It's going to bring it into direct confrontation with NATO. And is that a confrontation it's willing to take on?
Well, I'm, you know, as an Iran expert, I've been a little bit, my base case was a little bit incorrect. You know, the Supreme Leader, Ali Khamenei, is usually a good judge of power relationships, and he usually calculates correctly. And I'm a little bit surprised that he's cast his die-in with this loser in Moscow, Mr. Putin, who's basically isolated, basically defeated in Ukraine. I mean, he keeps redefining his objectives, but basically he's been defeated. He's going to lose more cities in the east. He's going to lose. His army doesn't want to fight. They just want to survive and go back to their wives. They have no interest in grabbing any more Ukrainian territory. Putin is lost. He may even be overthrown. And I'm surprised that Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei has put his chips on this losing gambit on the roulette wheel here. It's ridiculous. And yes, he risks more U.S. Navy searches of his ships coming out of the Gulf. He risks Mr. Netanyahu, who's coming back to power in Israel, urging Mr. Biden or agitating to strike Iranian nuclear facilities, to conduct more assassinations of Iranian scientists inside Iran. Mr. Khamenei is really risking a lot and gaining very, very little here, which is a little bit surprising to me.
Frank, are you also surprised? Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, absolutely. And there is another much less significant axis, I think, that's sort of operational axis that's worth considering, but it's important to the Israelis, and that's their ability to conduct airstrikes into Syria, for which they require the largesse of Russia to do so without casualties. So that, I mean, that's a factor, but I don't think it's a strategic factor, more an operational one. My concern is, it goes back deep now into the last decade or so. So we have, if we look back, you see very close cooperation at the military level between these powers, and I suspect that's driven a lot of this. And both my colleagues have expressed the fear, if you like, of an increasing, if not an alliance, then a relationship, as the Americans put it. And it does seem that that's a direction of travel. That's the escalator, if you like, we're on. With some breaks like that Israeli-Russian problem in Syria itself.
Mm. Pavel, this military exchange, it seems to violate the terms of the 2015 nuclear agreement. Russia has all but stopped helping revive that agreement since the February invasion. Why is that?
Well, official Russian line is that we are for the agreement. It's a good thing. But the West, and primarily the Americans, don't want it to happen, and that they spoiled it under President Donald Trump, and they are because everything right now bad in the world, but the Russian diplomats are placing on the Americans. So that's kind of the Russian position. I don't think right now that Iran and actually is that important right now for Russia. The Kremlin is all engaged in what's happening in Ukraine with increasing sanctions, with sanctions on Russian oil. I mean, their plate is so full. They right now are not really that much engaged in the Iranian problem, at least the top leadership. Of course, they're specialists that work on that, but the top leadership, Putin, I don't think that he's all the time thinking about Iran.
It's not a priority. I want to bring in
Russia,
Frank on this one, because just to jump in there, because I'm interested to think or to see your opinion on how does Iran prioritize the JCPOA itself? I mean, it seems to be further jeopardizing it. Does it have any faith in it? Does it want to continue negotiations with the West to revive it, or is it just given up?
Well, with respect, that's probably something that Kenneth would be far better to comment on than myself. I'm not an expert on Iran or the military capability aspect, but as a general commentator, I would think it would be a very poor idea for Iran to pull even further away from the JCPOA, particularly, as Kenneth said, against the context of Netanyahu coming back.
Mm. Well, Kenneth, do you agree with that?
No, I mean, I think Iran, you know, they had several chances, and it came very, very close to an agreement, and Iran pulled back each time with new demands, which the United States couldn't meet. So obviously, I think Iran doesn't see it as that vital anymore. First of all, they're afraid that Mr. Biden might not be reelected, and a next president may come in and cancel it again. They would be asked to dismantle all this nuclear infrastructure that they dismantled once and then built back up after Mr. Trump left, and then take it away again. And the sanctions relief, they're already selling, almost 1 million barrels or at least 500,000 barrels a day of oil to China. And they're not feeling the effect of sanctions to the degree that perhaps they did before the JCPOA in 2015. And they've got their smuggling routes and their deals lined up to earn revenue from China and others. And so they don't, I don't think, feel any urgency to get back into the deal. But, to comment on what's been said about Mr. Putin, you know, I mean, other dictators crossed the red lines of the United States of America, and that did not end well for them. And this will not end well for Mr. Putin either, is my forecast.
Okay, and that will be our final thought. Thanks very much to all of you for joining us today. Pavel Falkenhayer in Moscow, Frank Ledwidge in Oxford, and Kenneth Katzman there in Miami. And thank you too very much for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website. That's aljazeera.com. For further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. We're at AJInsideStory. From me, Laura Kyle, and the whole team here, it's bye for now.